sand mining is a relatively new industry in Wisconsin. Sure, there's been a frac sand mine near Maiden Rock for decades, but it wasn't until the last 3 years that frac sand facilities started taking off in Wisconsin. According to a recent report from the Wisconsin Center for Investigative Journalism, the number of frac sand mining and processing facilities doubled in 2011. Now there are around 80 existing facilities and another 20 on the way. The speed with which this industry has come to our state has caused controversy and concern, but it has also brought an economic boom. Whether you're for it or against, frac sand mining and processing is having a huge economic impact on the state and western Wisconsin in particular. This hour on the West Side, we're going to talk about frac sand economics. And I'm Rich Kramer. I'd like to welcome our guests this hour. First, I will welcome our first guest, Jeff French, and he is the Barron County Administrator, and he has been in the driver's seat while a number of frac sand mining operations have set up in his county. Jeff, thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Rich, for having me.
Our pleasure. And next, joining us by phone is Toby Madden. And Toby is an economist with the Federal Reserve Bank in Minneapolis. Toby, thank you so much for being with us.
Thanks for having me. And my views that I express tonight are mine and not necessarily those of the Federal Reserve Bank in Minneapolis or the Federal Reserve System.
All right, fair enough. And joining us by phone from Madison is Dee Hall. Dee Hall is an investigative reporter with the State Journal. And she is also an intern coordinator and volunteer with the Wisconsin Center for Investigative Journalism, also in Madison. And they are about to release a report on just how much of an impact frac sand mining is having on our state. And we are very gracious that Dee and the Center have allowed us to preview that report on our show. And Dee, thank you so much for joining us.
Sure, not a problem. Thanks for having me.
So let's get down to brass tacks, and I'll start with you, Dee Hall. And again, for the listeners, you can call in with any questions or comments. The number is 800-228-5615. But I want you all to know that this is not a debate about frac sand mining. This is strictly a discussion about the economic impact that this industry is having on the region. Nonetheless, give us a call. Tell us what you think about that industry and what you think about the economic impact that it's having. Do you or someone you know have a job now with a frac sand mining company, whether you're driving a truck, hauling the sand, or whether you're pushing buttons at the facility? Give us a call. The number is 800-228-5615. That number again is 1-800-228-5615. So, Dee Hall, I'll start with you. And as I mentioned, the Wisconsin Center for Investigative Journalism, which is a partner with Wisconsin Public Radio, they're set to release a report this Sunday, which was really well done, by the way, and it's going to be talking about how much this impact, or how big of an impact this really is. Now, we're not going to give away too much of the story, but we're going to get some general talking points out of the way. So, first of all, how much of an impact is frac sand mining having on western Wisconsin and the state as a whole?
Well, thanks for having me on. I just wanted to say, first of all, that nobody in the state except our news organization is really trying to kind of put an overview on this industry. It has grown so quickly, and the growth is in so many different counties in west central and northwest Wisconsin that it's really even hard to keep track of. So the last two summers, we have assigned an intern, in both cases a graduate student, to literally look across the state and find every single frac sand mine processing facility, rail loading facility that they could find related to this industry. And what we found in our report in July was that the number of sites had doubled to over 100 in just 1 year. From summer of 2011 to this summer to July, this past July. So, of course, the natural question was, well, what's the impact of that? We have written some about the environmental impact. We've written some about the unknowns, about what this does to water quality, air quality. But we hadn't, and no one had, tried to take a look at how many jobs is this creating. And so that was the task for our story, which will be released Sunday, and it will be appearing in a lot of newspapers out in your neck of the woods. Mm-hmm. What we did was we took the job site numbers, that estimates by the Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation. They're our former Department of Commerce. They had come up with an estimate of a per-site job creation. They hadn't tried to ever put it all together or count all the sites, but they are estimating that there are about 10 jobs for every mine. Now, that's an average. Some mines are giant, and they have many more employees. Some are much smaller and might have literally two or three employees. So that's 10 per mine, and then 50 to 80 jobs for every processing facility, which is the facility that takes the sand, washes it, and gets it ready, and you know, and dries it, and then gets it ready for distribution and for transportation. So 50 to 80 jobs for every processing facility or combined operations. Some of them are a combination of mine and processing facility. So we took those numbers, which were their estimates, and then we applied them to every mining operation that we could find that was either operating now or in development and about to begin operation. And using those numbers, we came up with over 2,000 jobs.
That is quite a sizable number. And just speaking in general about the industry, it seems like it's growing so fast that, you know, there's a lot of unknowns. And as you mentioned, that these are some estimates from the center and that have been corroborated with the Economic Development Corporation. But why is there so many unknowns about, you know, the number of plants and about the number of jobs that could be created? Is it just because it's been coming so fast?
That's part of the reason. And another reason is that not most of these facilities don't require state approval. They're approved primarily by local governments. In some cases, these are town governments, which are very small operations. And they're in areas with not a lot of media coverage. You know, this isn't happening in the middle of Milwaukee or the middle of Madison. This is happening in largely rural communities up in northwest and west central Wisconsin. And so it's a combination of those two things. It's, you know, the approval is on a very local level for the most part. There are a couple of them do have state permits, but most of them have, mostly are locally controlled. And second of all, it's, you know, they're in rural areas where there isn't a lot of news coverage. So that's one of the reasons we were so interested in getting involved in covering this, because we felt like people in these regions really were hungering for more information about how, you know, what was happening to their, not just their region, but how is it playing out across the state.
Right, and people, you know, because there isn't a lot of information and because of the speed, it seems like there's a lot of concerns about this industry. And do you have any idea or any kind of gut feelings about how this kind of report will be received? Because I've heard a lot of discussions at these among people that are opposed to the industry that, well, the jobs are good, but at what cost? That kind of a question, which I'm sure we'll hear as callers start filling the lines tonight.
That is the central tension in this entire industry. It is the tension between rural areas, which need jobs, and the environmental concerns, the traffic concerns that you have when you live in a rural area. If suddenly you go from an agricultural or small town industries to a larger industry like a frac sand mine can be, that is naturally going to change some of the quality of life. And, you know, some people are going to say and do say that it's changing it for the worse. There's also some concern that perhaps there isn't enough oversight. There aren't enough hoops for these mines to go through before they're approved. Of course, the mine operators would tell you it's the opposite, that they go through many hoops, probably more than they care to. But, I mean, this has led, as you know better than anybody, this has led to great division in some communities. There was a recall election in Barron County just on Tuesday, against a board member related to frac sand mining. Recently, there was another frac sand processing plant that was blocked by opponents because it was going to be next to a school.
Right.
And then you've got another lawsuit also in Buffalo County, somebody alleging that the county is not following its own zoning code.
Mm-hmm. Definitely a very contentious issue. Now, but about the jobs themselves, and again, strictly speaking, economically speaking, is there any kind of a ballpark figure for what the wages might be and whether these are family-supporting jobs? You know, that's a big topic. I mean, jobs are one thing, but
whether they can support a family and whether or not there might be benefits involved?
Well, of course, it depends on the cost of living in the different communities. But I know we did, in the start of the story, we feature a facility called Preferred Sands, mm-hmm. which is in Blair. And their entry-level wages are $15 to $20 an hour. So we didn't actually take it a step further to see how those compared with local wages. Certainly, they're attractive enough to be drawing people from other industries, and you know, but you know, I would guess, given depending on where people live, that those might be reasonable wages for that area.
And draw they do. There was a couple of frac sand mining companies that had open or job fairs recently. One was last winter in Augusta, drew 700 people, and I was amazed. That it drew on that many people. I want to go to Jeff French now, and you and I were recently at a groundbreaking for a massive frac sand mining and drying loading frac sand mining company that put together a drying and loading facility in between Poskin and Barron. This plant is owned by Superior Silica Sand, a Texas company, but it's big by even industrial sand standards. Once it's completed, it will be capable of processing 2.4 million tons of sand. And during that meeting, the CEO, Rick Shear, told me that Superior Silica will be hiring about 100 people altogether when all is said and done. So, Jeff French, what does that kind of hiring do for your county?
Thank you, Rich. That's a big impact on our county. And, in fact, the latest numbers that I have from Superior Silica Sands is they had over 600 people attend their open house looking for work. So, 100 new jobs, roughly, and their salary is similar to what the other lady was saying. So, you know, their range in salary, they've told me, is anywhere from about $15 to $27 an hour. $27 are their electrical engineers, their electrical guys who know what's going on, or, you know, have a two-year technical education. So it does have an impact. I don't know. I can't say for certain what overall economic impact it has. I can tell you that Canadian National Railway claims that they're putting $35 million to refurbish the lines from Ladysmith to Poskin. That's a lot of money. Mm-hmm. Superior Silica Sands claims that between Canadian National and themselves, I believe they said at that open house, it's about $84 million that they've put in just themselves. I was not aware until at the open house how large that this plant was, and I was told after the open house, I believe this will be the second or third largest drying plant in North American continent. So it's a lot, you know. And I think we can see it somewhat directly in our sales tax in Barron County, because we're up about 42,000 over last year, and we're down from a high of about $3.5 million in sales tax. We've dropped as low as $3 million or less. So we've about $3 million. So our sales tax has retreated to about $500,000.
And I want to get to Toby Madden here in just a bit, but first we're going to take the first call of the night. And with this, we go to Eau Claire, and Lynn is calling. Lynn, you're on the air. Thanks so much for calling in. What's on your mind?
Good evening, Rich and guests. I am a victim of asbestosis. My father worked in a refinery. He had four children. We all have lesions in our lungs. Mm-hmm. My remaining brother and sister, if they get a cold, they cough up blood. Mm-hmm. There is a human cost, and there's a lot of dollars. And silicosis is actually a lot harder on your lungs. And what's the cost down the road? What's the cost for the next generation that has to be brought into this?
Can I mention, Rich, that we actually did address that a couple times in some reports that we've done, not the one that's coming out Sunday, but previous reports. And there hasn't been any standard set for ambient exposure of silica sand,
right?
Because people have not been that concerned about it. Small sand and gravel operations tend to be small. Some of these are much larger, and so it is a well recognized danger in the workplace, and there are very strict rules about how people who work directly with silica must be protected. But there is no standard right now for how how much is too much in the air outside of the plant.
And there was a petition from some citizens in Chippewa County and in the surrounding area around Eau Claire that had petitioned the DNR to set a standard. And they went through and they released this study, which was years late. But they basically said that that there's not enough information at this point, and what they have as far as standards for the particulates is acceptable. But I do believe that the EPA is looking into this as well. Jeff French?
Correct. That's correct, Rich. Earlier this summer, I don't want to say EPA, but OSHA did give, and I have copies of these, they have gave a very detailed diagrams on how to cut down the silicosis, and they cited specifically at the dry facilities and where it's unloaded, where the sand is, after the sand has been dried and it's been transported, both loading and unloading, and they gave some very practical ways to cut down on that sand and that drift. I'm not an expert in this, so I don't know how they're going to enforce it, but I just, that information is available.
All right, Lynn, thank you so much for the call. Is there anything else you'd like to mention?
I have read the directions for taking off your clothes. We're talking about the children of the sand miners, and it's significant. Asbestosis. I have the sword of mesothelioma hanging over my head, and I don't want that for my grandchildren or anyone else's. It's okay is not good enough. Thank you.
Thank you very much for the call. And a reminder to other listeners that would like to get in on the discussion, the number is 800-228-5615. We've got one phone line open at this time. We're talking about frac sand mining economics. And again, this is not a debate on whether frac sand mining should or shouldn't be in Western Wisconsin. I think we're past that. It is here, and now during this hour, we're just looking at the specifics of how this industry is impacting jobs and tax base, et cetera, et cetera. So do give us a call, 800-228-5615. Now, Toby Madden, have you been able to track any direct changes as an economist for the Federal Reserve in unemployment, say, or other ways that this frac sand mining industry has been responsible for?
Well, as an economist, I kind of like to take a look first at the bigger picture and the costs and benefits. And Lynn does have a point that you've got to take into account several costs besides just the benefits. And with the process that's involved, where before Western Wisconsin was primarily agriculture-based, tourism-based, had some manufacturing plants scattered around, now found itself has valuable sand. And that sand is trucked to a processing facility, it's processed, and then railed to the wells, or near the wells, it's trucked to the wells, it's mixed with chemicals, shot with high pressure underground to release natural gas and oil, and that oil is refined, and the gas is cleaned, and it's sent by pipeline to households to use for cooking and heating their home, mm-hmm. or for gasoline retail stations so you can fill up your car. It might be used for electricity generation. So this whole process saves consumers money, and when they spend that money, it goes through the whole value chain all the way through and ultimately benefits the owners of those minerals, the landowners that own the mineral rights to that, and everybody else involved. So you're talking, for example, in that 2.4 million tons a year, that's about 96,000 truckloads that go back and forth to the plant, the processing plant.
Mm-hmm.
And so you've got lots and lots of jobs in the transportation. And actually, the transportation costs far outweigh the costs of just pulling out the sand and processing the sand.
Absolutely.
So then in addition to that, you've got all these new people that are becoming into the community to work, and then they're going to need glasses, they're going to need health care, they're going to need schools for their children, they're going to need accountants. There's a lot of spillover effects from this.
Right, service
industry.
And so
you get a lot of more economic bang than just the direct jobs in the sand mine and the processing facility. However, there's a lot of spillover effects as well. not just on the positive side, but on the negative side, in that if you build a industrial plant next to a residential area, that residential area is negatively impacted and is bearing the cost from that facility of increased congestion on the roads. The roads are being beat up even more.
Right.
And even though the benefits outweigh the costs, as you'd pointed out, that sand mining is there and it's happening, there's ways to deal with the costs that might be beneficial to people like Lynn, in the sense that if you put a facility that's farther away from people, then you'd have less people breathing in the dust or the fumes coming off the trucks. You found that several of the mining companies will actually purchase the homes around the facility because they would rather do that than put a really negative cost on people around the facility.
All right. We're going to take our first break here. We're talking about the economics of frac sand mining and the impact it's having on western Wisconsin, eastern Minnesota as well. The number is 800-228-5615. The phone lines are full right now, but we will take a couple calls and work some more callers through when we return. The number again, 800-228-5615. We'll be back with more in just a bit. I'm Rich Kramer, and welcome back to the West Side on Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks for listening. We're talking about frac sand economics and the impact this new and burgeoning industry is having on our region. Listeners, you can call in with your questions or comments at 800-228-5615. And again, this is not a debate about whether frac sand mining is good or bad. This is just an analysis, hour-long talk conversation about what is happening in our region as far as this industry and the money it is generating is concerned. 1-800-228-5615. I'm joined by Barron County Administrator Jeff French, economist with the Federal Reserve Bank in Minneapolis, Toby Madden, and investigative reporter Dee Hall with the Wisconsin Center for Investigative Journalism, that will be coming out with a report on this very topic this Sunday. So keep an eye out for that. And in the meantime, we thank them for sharing some of the info with us before then. All right. And with that, let's go to the phones one more time. We're going to go back to Eau Claire, and Gary is on the line. And Gary, thanks for calling in. You're on the air, sir.
Yes. This has to do with the neighbors of frac sand mines. I have friends in Trempealeau County who are afraid of what's going to happen in their neighborhood where a proposed mine is supposed to be going in.
Mm-hmm.
And one happens to be a fourth-generation farmer there, and he's going to lose what he has as far as a nice neighborhood, besides the roads being beat up, or sand in the air as well, and dust in the air. Another one is a next-door neighbor, and they have to give up their privacy, their environment, so that other people can make a lot of money. And I said, well, what do you think of those two people that are going to be making the money? She says, the answer to me was, well, what are you going to do when somebody throws $1 million in your face?
Mm.
So it's neighbors against neighbors, and it appears to be pretty vicious. And I responded. I said, you can't. This is so big, and there's so much money involved in this. I said that you are just a little ant, and there's nothing you're going to ever be able to do about it.
All right. Thank you. Gary, thanks so much for the call. The number again is 800-228-5615. We do have one phone line open right now. I want to go back to Dee Hall. And Dee, did the center... did it look into the prices that were being paid to landowners for their mineral rights, or just selling their property straight out?
We actually looked at that a little bit last year, and we found that there were huge differences between an assessed valuation that a person might have and what they were getting offered by the mining company. So very attractive offers to sell land.
All right. And
still there?
Yeah, we've got you coming through the ISDN. We had a little bit of technical difficulties, but you're coming through loud and clear. Can you hear me, Dee?
You can hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Okay, good. I'm on the mic now. Good.
Yes, yes.
So what we did look at that a little bit last year. We did not look at it with this report. I think it's a good point, but in fact, that is the case, that there is a lot of money in frac sand mining that is being spent just to acquire the sites. A lot of them are farms, some of them cranberry bogs, and essentially people are getting double, triple how much they would normally get for their property. And as you can imagine, this is pretty hard to resist.
Right. Jeff French is...
I'm
sort of thing is happening in Barron County, I would imagine.
It is. I'm in agreement with DA. That's a very, very poignant analogy because... 3-4 times what that farmland would sell for as a farm is a true statement. I think it's interesting. My wife, Wisconsin Counties Association annual meeting, they were down in the Cranberry Bog area, and it's interesting because the Cranberry Bog people are finding that, you know, they want the reject sand, and they're putting that over the top of the Cranberry Bogs when they're frozen. Mm. The sand is darker than the snow, and it helps the Cranberry Bogs thaw out quicker. Then the sand goes to the bottom, and it's more conducive for the cranberries to grow.
Interesting.
So there are some offshoots. We're also finding that the sand that is rejected by these companies is being used by the farmers for bedding instead of hay and straw. And I'm not debating the fact that intense use of trucking is true. And what we're trying to do in Barron County is protect those with road agreements. In fact, we are doing that. And
right.
That is, we are protecting the roads. We've had two companies have given us $100,000 up front, and they're going to be paying 100% of the cost of repairing those roads.
Oh, because the issue being these trucks are very, very heavy, and the roads the plants that they're hauling from or hauling to weren't designed for that.
That's correct. The Wisconsin State Statute allows that road to be built and operated based on historical use. There's a 1938 or 1932 U.S. Supreme Court decision from Texas which says that the highway commissioner has the authority to use that historical, and we cited that, and as well as Chippewa County, that was our basis for protecting the roads that the citizens, the historical citizens of the county, have paid for.
Because that's a big concern, is that the taxpayers will ultimately end up footing the bill for this industry in one way or another.
That's correct, and that's a very valid one, and especially truck uses. Why should the taxpayers? When you look at historical use, how the county road system has been built, historical use, now you have high intensity or high use trucking. How does that benefit the public good for one company to effectively almost destroy is a strong word, but really take the useful life out of that road in 5 years, for example?
Mm-hmm. Back to the phones.
I'll mention
go ahead, D-Hall.
I was going to say our report also talks about Chippewa and Wood counties just as examples of places that are also trying to recoup some of the costs or even get costs up front for likely road construction maintenance issues.
But as you mentioned in the report, the reporter mentioned in the report and you fact-checked, the Wood County situation has sparked some controversy from and some concern among state legislators, mainly Terry Moulton, state senator, and state assemblyman Scott Souter, that they're being a little unfair in targeting this industry.
Right. According to the State Department of Transportation, these such fees, as Jeff was mentioning, they are allowed under state law, but one of the things is they must apply equally to all businesses. And what has happened, what the argument in Wood County is, the only fees that are being levied are against frac sand companies at this moment because it's just they've just started doing this. And so it appears from the outside that only frac sand companies will have to pay this fee. The Wood County Highway Administrator is saying that's not the case, but we're just starting it because all of a sudden we have this huge possible impact on our roads, and we feel like if we don't levy this fee, we will just lose millions of dollars in maintenance and construction costs.
So, Jeff French, how do you strike that balance when a fee has to impact all industries equally, but this one industry is having maybe an unequal impact on the county?
Correct. It's an unequal impact. The roads were built for historical use, and, Rich, quite honestly, the companies that we're dealing with, I know all except one of them have come out and said, yes, we do road agreements in other parts of the world or in other states. They're standard industry practice. We understand this. We haven't had the intense pushback. And I really respect the citizens of Barron County because I think we've actually had their support in that they want us to do the road agreements because this should not be a burden on the taxpayer, and especially in this era of levy limits when you cannot raise the levy or you'd have to go out and borrow, say, to repair that road in 5 to 7 years. And you know, typically a county trunk system should go 20 to 25 years.
I think the other point to make is, of course, it's in the company's best interest that these roads stay maintained as well. They're not going to be able to continue trucking at the rate that they're planning to if the roads have fallen to pieces.
All right. Back to the phones. We will take another call. This time we go to Willem in Colfax. And Willem, thanks so much for calling in. You're on the air. What's on your mind? Willem, are you there? Oh, there we go. Willem, you're on the air.
I live close to some frac sand mines, and they're all in on the edge of Chippewa County, and I live in Dunn County. And I think that this, if you take the totality of the increased use of diesel fuel for trucking, that puts a higher premium on diesel fuel, and I think that with the farmers in the area, they might end up paying more for diesel fuel. And I think it has a negative effect on, you know, like who wants to move or come and start a company in an industrial sand mining area where basically our infrastructure has been turned into a part of an extension of the mine's infrastructure. Mm. All the noise and all that. And the fact that there is no silica sand standard doesn't mean that it's not a danger. It just means that because of what's happened in our state and sort of, a third of the DNR being laid off and the resources being cut off, and the fact that these companies are getting a tax break, plus most of the profits for this are leaving the state along with the sand. And for many reasons, the tourism, this used to be called God's Country, but how many people vacation in West Virginia or some other place? Or I think that people should take a little drive in Chippewa County and see what this looks like. And to me, it looks like an obscenity to the land. And I don't think it's a good thing. I really don't. It's not a good thing for the neighbors. It's not a good thing for the neighborhood. And I don't even go to Bloomer anymore because I don't shop there, so they're not getting my dollars because I don't even want to see it. Mm. I hate going by it. I hate the way it looks. I hate seeing all the trucks. I just, it's ruined my peace of mind. It's ruined the potential for this area as far as being I think it's a poor choice of land use. I think the threats to the are way outweigh the benefits, and the people who benefit are very few, and the people who suffer are very many. And there's a song I think that refers to this as "They get the gold mine, we get the shaft," and I think that sort of sums up what happens
all right
to the rest of us.
Willem, thanks so much for your call, and the concerns are out there, absolutely, 100%. And I'd like to go to
Toby.
Yeah, Toby.
Toby. I'd say that the benefits are really widespread and small in the sense that really the benefit is to everybody that heats their home with gas or cooks with gas or gets electricity from gas-generated power plants or gets oil, gasoline for their cars because they get a little bit cheaper than they would otherwise of having to import that product.
But
in addition, there's probably lots of companies that are planning to move to the area to support the industry. There's going to be a lot of breakdowns of the machinery. There's going to be a lot of machinery that needs to be fixed. There's going to be a lot of support industries for the people that are going to be working in this mine.
But not to
belittle what William had to say, that there are a lot of people that are experiencing the costs of these sand mines.
Does he have a point, though, with the sense there will be such a need for diesel fuel for all these trucks hauling it? Will that impact the local prices for other people, for farmers?
Well, I think that the refineries will be able to adjust the amount of diesel fuel that's being produced and sent to those areas. It might have a small local impact of maybe higher congestion costs to get the diesel fuel to those areas, but I don't believe it's going to have a significant impact.
All right, now back to the phones. And Margie is going to touch on a subject that I wanted to move to anyway, and that is whether or not these jobs are local. Margie, you're on the air. Thanks for calling in.
Hello. Thank you. I think this is one of my concerns, and I'd like to know if the study addresses this issue of the percentage of jobs that are taken up locally, or are they people that are being brought in from other places to fill these jobs? And I'm hoping that the study is going to address that, because Dunn County right now has a moratorium on more frac sand mining.
Recently extended, too.
Yes, it's recently extended, but that's going to expire. And I'm hoping that the county does have their policies in order and so forth at that time, so that it can be a controlled development rather than just a sand rush that everybody is out there doing whatever they want to.
All right.
So, but I'd like to know about the percentage of employees that are being hired. Are they local or are they from someplace else?
Thank you so much. And D. Hall, I have heard a lot of suspicion that, about whether these workers filling these jobs are coming from the region or whether or not they're coming from out of state. What were you able to find, or what were your reporters able to find when they did this this research?
We actually did not look at that issue. That was it's a very cogent issue, I think, obviously, especially if you live in the area. But the problem that we have is that a lot of the companies individually are not that forthright with their job creation, nor exactly who they're hiring to fill these jobs. And so our report is based on projections, which are based on estimates of that the state had. We do have a couple of case studies here in which, for example, in Chippewa County, we talked to a person from the Chippewa County Local Economic Development Agency. He stated that, for example, there used to be 150 out-of-work truck drivers in Chippewa County, and now there's a shortage of truck drivers. That's just an anecdote, though.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
We don't really know how many people are being imported, but I think just using common sense at the lower end of the scale, you're probably not going to have a lot of importation. There should be, you know, with the kind of moderate to lower skill jobs and the lower pay, you're not going to be able to draw people from far afield. With the more skilled jobs, I would guess you would have people who might come from a distance to take those jobs or relocate from another plant that company may own elsewhere.
Now, Jeff French, another anecdote is that one I heard from a citizen of Augusta, which has a sand mining and processing center there. There was, in this specific case, there were about 700 people that came looking and applying for jobs there. And this resident has told me that they're seeing a lot of out-of-state, you know, a lot of Texas license plates, and that only two people had been hired locally. Since that is anecdotal and can't be confirmed, I'm going to ask you, is that a concern? Do you have any concerns about these companies not hiring local?
I've asked that question specifically. I met with a company last Wednesday, and I asked that question: how many of your people are local? And they were, and I can only ask, you know, I can't search their books. 100% of that people at the dry plant and everybody involved was a local hire.
Mm-hmm.
I asked them, okay, where are they not local? And as Dee has pointed out, it's the higher level jobs are not local, specifically logistics, meaning they need their people for logistically need to understand how do you get a 40-car train from New Auburn, Wisconsin to West Texas and has to be routed through Chicago and St. Louis mm-hmm. into New Orleans and back into Texas. Those logistics people, they told me, are, you know, basically special training. They come in, they work, and they work in different areas. So I do not want anybody to think that they're 100% local, because they're not, because there are certain parts of this industry that are multi-state. I will say this anecdotally: I've had people stop me in Walmart this year who did not have jobs, who have approached me and said, "Mr. French, I just want you to know, I now work for the XYZ sand company. I was a trucker. I was out of work. I've now worked all winter." I've had that happen on more than one occasion. I had one young man approach me. I was out shopping, and he approached me and he said, he just shared with me, he says, "I now pay more in taxes than what my take-home pay was at my former job." So, again, that's all anecdotal. I don't know maybe Dee knows what steps, if a person would ever find out how many of those people were local. They claim, the companies claim that they are. How would you verify that?
That is a question that I'm not sure of myself. Dee?
Honestly, I don't know either. I think, you know, if the state decided that they wanted to get in the business of trying to quantify that, they certainly could do that mm-hmm. with surveys and things of that nature. They might have a little more luck than we've had. you know, some of the companies consider you know, kind of their internal operations to be proprietary, and they're not wanting to chat about them very much.
Right.
And I do understand that. So I wish we could answer that question about local versus out of state.
Well, there is some benefit to bringing out of state workers into the local areas. It brings in more people, so that means you need more houses to be built for those people, and more schools to be built for their children, or more teachers to teach those children,
sure,
et cetera. So you bring more population into the area, it drives economic growth as well. And that's kind of laid out in our Fed Gazette, which is our business publication that we have out of the Federal Reserve Bank of Minneapolis. And Phil Davies wrote an article about frac sanding that tried to take a look at the bigger picture of all the intricacies rather than just taking a look at one particular town and one particular area, kind of how it interrelated. And by having out-of-state people come in and work there, it drives a lot of economic activity.
All right, and Jeff French?
I just want to make one comment. We know that the people constructing the rail line in through Russ County and Barron County, they are not local. That's Rail Works out of Minneapolis-St. Paul, three crews doing that. But I can tell you that I am told on good, you cannot get a motel room in Cameron, you cannot get a motel room in Ladysmith, Wisconsin, because of the construction of the rail, the frac sand, the power line, and the oil pipeline. So some of what this gentleman is saying from the Federal Reserve, we're seeing it. I mean, we're seeing these people come. I don't know if they're going to build houses or stay, but, I mean, they're having an impact, immediate impact.
And that is that's the spillover, if I've ever heard of it. We are going to take our final break here on the west side. We're talking about frac sand economics, and we're speaking with Jeff French, Barron County Administrator, Dee Hall, investigative reporter, and volunteer with the Wisconsin Center of Investigative Journalism in Madison, and Toby Madden, an economist with the Federal Reserve Bank in Minneapolis. We've got one more caller on the line, and we will take as many calls as we can until the top of the hour about this topic, or on this topic. The number is 800-228-5615. That number again is 1-800-228-5615. We'll have more West Side after this. I'm Rich Kramer, and you're listening to the West Side on Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks for tuning us in. We're talking about frac sand mining, and not whether it's good or bad, but whether or how big the economic impact is on Western Wisconsin and the state as a whole. We are joined by Dee Hall, an investigative reporter, and with the Wisconsin Center for Investigative Journalism in Madison. We are joined also by Toby Madden, an economist with the Federal Reserve Bank in Minneapolis, the branch there, and also by Jeff French, Barron County Administrator. And we've got one line open if anyone wants to call in with questions or comments for any of our guests. I'm interested to hear if anyone that is actually working at a frac sand mining operation is listening and would be willing to share their story. The number is 800-228-5615. And, of course, we'll take all other questions and comments that we can fit in till the top of the hour. Now, we were talking a little bit about rail earlier, and Jeff French, you've been involved for a long time with the Wisconsin West Rail Transit Authority, and had worked many years to restore the abandoned rail line from Barron to Ladysmith. Now Canadian National, as we mentioned earlier, is putting $35 million into this thing, and they're just bringing it back to life. So is frac sand mining responsible for this rail line coming back?
Rich, to the best of my knowledge, yes. The answer would be yes. Barron County, you're correct. The West Wisconsin Rail Transit Authority, a partnership between Chippewa and Barron County, worked hard for the last more than a decade to reopen those lines. Now, since you have the frac sand processors on the north-south line, which is the UP line from Chippewa to Barron, and Canadian National reopening, yes. And I have asked Canadian National specifically, does this mean you're going to cut out the small shipper like the Genio Turkey Store or the Bell Timber? And they told me no. They have to serve those people. So that is an uptick, and again, that's not perfection, but we did save, honestly, a hard dollar. It would have cost Barron County taxpayers $1.9 million to continue to participate in this process to get the rail lines rejuvenated from Barron to Cameron and from Rice Lake down to the Barron County line. So that's some real tax dollar savings there.
And is there a chance that go ahead, Dee Hall.
I was just going to mention that the Department of Transportation has done a statewide look at frac sand transportation by rail and by truck, and it projects that once the existing plants that are the ones that are operating as well as the ones that are currently in development, once they're at full development, that there will be over 2,000 rail cars a day heading, and that's a day, headed for drill sites outside of Wisconsin. And this is per work day, so that's times 250 or so. So that you can imagine, that's we're talking 500,000 rail cars a year if their projections are correct.
And I've even heard, I'm not sure if it was in the report that was written or put up with the by the center, or whether it was the Federal Reserve Bank in Minneapolis, but that there's a backlog, or there's a backlog of rail cars.
Correct. I'd just like to comment, maybe the economists from the Federal Reserve should comment on this, but the companies that we have in Barron County that we've tried to build a relationship, we asked that. We heard that, so we've called them and asked them, and they've told us yes. Mm-hmm. It's 9 months to get a new rail car, and they're actually either themselves, the frac sand companies, or their end users are buying these new rail cars and putting them into service. And we are seeing all kinds of new rail cars in Barron County. Mm-hmm. And you can always tell them, because they got the end of the axle is always painted blue.
And I'll keep an eye out for that. Toby Madden, would you like to chip in on this?
Sure. A couple years back, when the U.S. was producing just bountiful harvests, there had to be a lot of transportation needs through the rail, and they were reaching capacity with agricultural products. This year, we've got a drought in much of the grain-producing area of the United States, and so this year shouldn't be that much of a problem with the loads going through the system. They probably need different type of rail cars for grain versus handling heavy sand, and the market will respond by producing more sand cars for transportation.
Mm-hmm. We'll go back to the phones. We've had a caller on for a while, and go back to Colfax. And we'll hear from Jerry, I believe. Jerry, you're on the air. Thanks for waiting. What's your thought?
It's Terry, but thanks for taking my call. Maybe, I guess it's probably my call should be directed at Dee. But if I'm to assume that these companies located in the counties and townships, does that increase the property values in these townships? And if it does, has it been looked into to see what the side effect would be to the tech college system, which bases their funding from local property taxpayers and total property values? I'm more concerned about seniors in our area, not only Don or Chippewa or Barron County, but how does that affect them? I haven't done my own research yet, so I'm just wondering if somebody's already done that research.
Dee Hall? Any thoughts?
I'll throw in there what I know, and then I'm going to ask Jeff to maybe kick in as well. What I know is that there are some of these sand mines are spending or paying over $1 million a year in local property taxes. And that's because, of course, they have a more valuable site than they had before when it was a farm or a vacant field or whatever its previous use was. So they are paying property taxes. Whether that increases the value of the land close to the mine, I don't really know. Obviously, places that have sold to mines that have, you know, places assessed at $100,000 that they've sold for $300,000, that's part of that calculation then. The mine now owns that property. The mine now must pay property taxes, and that property, the mine property, is and processing property is more valuable. But I don't know, and maybe Jeff does, whether there's a spillover effect to properties around a mining or processing facility, whether the values go up or they go down.
Jeff French, that's your cue.
I cannot answer that. Dee, that's a great question. I will answer that question by informing the listeners that Barron County is working cooperatively with the Wisconsin Department of Revenue. We are telling them where these mines and processing plants are located so that they can go out and assess them. I have to respond to the caller. The equalized valuation of Barron County dropped by 6%. We just got that yesterday. So that's property values aren't going up, even with the frac sand companies coming in. It's still falling. And I think if my math is correct, that's about a 15% drop for Barron County since our peak. So
one more thing. I find that hard to realize, because if you look at it from the tech college system-wise, if they're basing their funding on the local property taxpayers and you're increasing the value in whether it's a township or a county or a municipality or whatever, it only makes sense that that goes up. The property value itself,
Yeah, and I can only tell you what the I can only respond by telling you what the state tells us that our equalized valuation is. They do a statistical analysis here out of Eau Claire, and that's what the county has to accept.
All right, and with that, we're going to take our final call this evening. We are getting very close to the top of the hour. We're going to go to Rice Lake, and we're going to go to Todd. Todd, you're on the air. Thanks so much for calling. What's on your mind?
Hey, thanks very much. I live in Barron County in Rice Lake, and I just wanted to thank Jeff French for his careful and thoughtful work on working through this issue, and just the I'm just excited every time I drive by one of these frac sand facilities and the loading facilities in the New Auburn area and around Barron County. My kids think it's funny because I cheer almost every time I go by because of the potential for jobs and things is amazing, and I count the 400 rail cars per site, and I just think it's a great thing, a great opportunity, when carefully and thoughtfully done, and I appreciate how Jeff French is doing that in Barron County.
All right, thank you.
Thank you.
There's some kudos there. That's just about our time, and I would like to, first off, thank you, all you guests, so much for taking part. Toby Madden, Dee Hall, and Jeff French, the discussion was very good this hour. I'd also like to thank Team Westside, including Jim Oliver. He handled the on-air production for you this evening and took the calls. Rebecca Rudolph provided some research and some assistance in producing the program. And Joey Dietrich handled promotions. And Molly O'Hearn, Grace Fair, and Dean Kallenbeck kept us all in line during the process. Tune in next week. We'll have the outdoor guys, Joe Knight of the Eau Claire Leader Telegram and Dave Carlson of the of Northland Adventures. We're going to talk about the wolf hunt, and I imagine there's going to be plenty of intense discussion on that as well. Until then, I'm Rich Kramer. We'll chat again next week. Thanks for listening.